B3. Number 22A.
We come to point 12, the one-valued logic. We have come the long way to the point of understanding. Understanding is mind's consciousness of itself. That mind is one mind, and therefore there is just one value under consideration. So that on that altitude of consciousness, we have now just one value and a logic which we call the one-valued logic, where all is mind and mind's ideas. They all have the same value, namely the divine value, no opposite value, no contradictory value. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. See, that's the one value. And here the beliefs are excluded, so we do not anymore try to resolve the conceptual logic. Here then we experience really that in science all is one, conquered, and that in that order God and nature are identical, she says. God and nature, can you see what has been regarded as subject and object as two in the classical logic is now identical. It's no more opposites. We have resolved the opposite, where Mrs. Eddy says God does not produce erring thoughts, where God does not know evil and disease and error. Therefore, there's only one value in which to think. Here, therefore, we understand now her statement that divine logic and revelation coincide. See, what we erroneously do when we read this statement, that under logic we understand the classical logic. And then we try to see how revelation and the classical logic coincide, and it doesn't work. That therefore, in arguing against critics, we try every trick to convince him that Mrs. Eddy's logic is right, and actually we never can. If we are thinking in the old logic, because what she says is that she gave divine logic and not human logic. And in divine logic, revelation and logic is one. It is all, because what comes as revelation actually is always God revealing himself, and that's always of one value. And so that logic which is divine coincides with divine logic. So from that standpoint, we must consider this statement. Again, it is a matter of seeing that we are not mixing up the old paradigm with the new paradigm, neither in theory nor in practice. That never works. And because the students are mostly not aware what is the new paradigm, what is the old paradigm, but always think it's just one paradigm, then the argument starts and the argument has never an answer. It can go on and on and on ad lib. It is only then when one begins to realize from which standpoint the other is thinking, from which level he is thinking, only then can one find a concord. Just what it says in science, all is one grand conquered. So we come to the next point. This was a short one, because the moment everything is one, it is absolutely easy. And yet, in this oneness, there is such a great possibility for us to misunderstand oneness. Therefore, the 13th point is the one-valued logic in mysticism and in science, the one valued logic in mysticism and in science. We go out from the experience that mysticism is building on the one valued logic, and that science is building on the one valued logic. Therefore, the question, are they the same? Therefore, because the mystics just always speak about the oneness, you see, the very definition of mystics means oneness, because it's the unio mystica, it's the mystical union, the mystical oneness. There is no mystic of duality. Mystics is, so to say, synonymous with oneness. So the mystic have oneness, science has a oneness. Are they the same? And here we must therefore make a differentiation and see that they are absolutely not the same. Though they may then use the same terminology and the same wordings and same phraseology, they are not the same. How do they differentiate? In mysticism, we have a one-valued logic which is conceptional. It is therefore a monistic conceptual logic. They go out that there is only one, that's a standpoint they can take, and so they have just a concept of oneness, a monistic conceptual logic. So that all concepts, no matter what they are, no matter if they are opposites or not, are all referring in that logic to one concept, the infinite one, but as a concept, not as a reality. Therefore, what the mystic try to do, they try to take everything in their human experience, whatever happens, and say, because there is only one being, therefore everything that happens must belong to that one, and therefore have all the nature of that one. Can you see? It sounds terrifically tempting. It even sounds logic. It sounds logic. The mystics call that the it's again Latin, the coincidentia oppositorum. I have written it down. The coincidentia oppositorum. You can easily figure out, even if you don't know Latin, what it means. Oppositorum comes from opposites. That's easy as that. And coincidentia means coincidence, meaning the mystical oneness is a oneness of opposites. The coincidence of opposites. They don't consider the opposites as opposites, as not coinciding. They consider that opposites coincide. We can no more reason that way. We don't know what they mean. It sounds illogical to us, doesn't it? That opposites coincide. Because we are trained for 2,000 years in the classical logic. But for the Eastern mind, this is very natural. They are trained in another logic, in another consciousness, and they don't feel that this is not right. And I will come back to it later on to show that in a way they are right, in a way. And we have just to find out in which way they are right. And that very thing in which way they are right differentiates them from the oneness which we have in science. The mystics, therefore, take all the opposites and unite them in their concept as belonging to the One. What does science do? The science just goes along the very opposite line of reasoning. Science does not want to take everything and put it into one. It takes the one and differentiates the one. Can you see? It goes just the other way. It says, here is one universe, and in order to be able to see the one universe, I have to differentiate that universe and differentiate the highest, the most extreme differentiation, naturally, is then opposites. And in this way, science tries to analyze the one and uses the method of differentiation and not the method of coinciding. Therefore, in Christian Science, when we have a monistic logic, it's a monistic logic of reality and not of concepts. So that actually all values are actually values of reality and not of concepts. All that is not of the values of reality, we call them so-called values, so-called. They are only conceptual values, not values of reality. You see the difference? So the so-called opposites really resolve themselves into nothingness because of the evaluation. Therefore, can you see what the monistic logic of science is? It's actually a monistic logic which is coupled with a two conceptual logic. Therefore, in science, we cannot have a one-valued logic just per se and say we throw the two conceptual logic overboard, because we would not be able to explain the universe with it. The mystics do. They just say everything is one. They put everything into one concept of the infinite one. But we do something else. We have a one-valued logic which includes another logic, namely the two conceptual logic. Meaning that without the lower logics, if you want to put them that way, the higher logics make no sense. They become mystical. So it isn't the one value that differs in mysticism and in science. It is the explanation of that one value which differs. And the explanation of that one value in mysticism is this coincidentia oppositorum, whereas in science that one value is a value that is based on a two conceptual logic, wherein one of the two is a value and the other is not a value, a nothingness. I think if you see that point here, then you are once and for all healed of mysticism. Because that's a great point. See, the whole tendency of the present world consciousness is towards mysticism, not towards science. People are fed up of material science. It hasn't worked. They don't believe anymore in it. They distrust science and scientists. So what can they do? They can either do one of two things again. They can either go backward or forward. Most people have chosen to go backward, to the mystics of the East and to mystics of the Middle Age. And try. Also in Christian Science, there is a great tendency towards mysticism in Christian Science. That's why Goldsmith had such an appeal. That's why all the other things have such an appeal to the Christian scientists, because they have never grasped Christian Science as a science, and therefore they are somehow at a dead end. They don't know anymore how to evolve this science, how to get more insight and higher revelation in science, so they are looking again to the mysticism and try to build in mysticism into Christian Science. And there we have to be careful, so that we see what is our safety. Our safety is that mysticism, as we have seen, takes everything in and says it's all one. And science makes the very opposite. It goes out from the infinite one and differentiates. And in differentiated thing, it can say, this is conceptual and it's a wrong value or it's no value, and this is a right differentiation and it has value. You see those two different approaches of oneness in mysticism and oneness in science. And we have to see that, or else there is that constant drag towards mysticism. We come to a next point, 14, to dimensional logic. Dimensional logic. This is the logic each one of us must understand, or we are sunk. That textbook just doesn't make sense without seeing the dimensional logic. What is it? We come from the oneness in mysticism and science, have seen that mystical logic takes opposites and makes them coincide. And in the Christian Science textbook, you also have these opposites that seem to coincide. I give you an example in order to get started on that dimensional logic from the textbook. We read, for instance, in the textbook, in one place, you know that mind produces all action. Mind, capital M, produces all action. And all means all in Christian Science. But somewhere around about 300 pages in between, she says that mortal mind produces the action of the mortal body. That's her statement. Well, if mind produces all action, then if I have a minor proposition that mortal mind produces the action of the mortal body, then the syllogism would run that I have a major proposition of mind producing all action, and a minor proposition, a special case of it, mortal mind produces also all action only of the mortal body, which therefore would mean, conclusion, that the divine mind produces the action of the mortal body. There you have it. Huh? Therefore, these are the contradictions, and somehow we don't believe that divine mind produces all the action of the mortal body, because the action of the mortal body can be diseased and can be very painful. Therefore, is that syllogism stated rightly? Is the major and the minor proposition stated rightly? Yes, they are stated rightly as proposition, because they have been taken out from the textbook, and the textbook is the teaching of Christian Science. And yet still they are not stated rightly. Why? Because the major proposition is from an other level than the minor proposition. Therefore, no conclusion can be drawn from it. What does it mean that in the logic of Christian Science we are not allowed to mix up in a syllogism the levels? We cannot put a major proposition from the level of, say, divine science, or let's here say of absolute Christian Science, together with a statement on the level of Christian Science. and draw a conclusion. It just does not work. This is not the properly, accurately stated syllogism. Which would mean what? Which would mean that every level has its own logic. And therefore a syllogism must always be stated within its own level, or there is no conclusion that is right. This is really what already around about the 30s and 40s, the German ontologist and philosopher Niklaus Hartmann has begun to see, that he began to introduce a dimensional logic, a dimensional ontology. Therefore, an ontology which reasons with various levels of experience and consciousness. And he began to see that we cannot mix that up, and naturally we see that too with the chart, that every level of the chart has its own logic and cannot be confounded with another one. So this is, therefore, this demands a dimensional logic, which in its first go, we could say it really demands first that we see that every level has its own logic. And then there is another aspect, which I will tell very soon. I was indicating that so many books, therefore, are coming out which seem to prove from the text of the textbook that matter is spirit. For instance, I don't know if you know that book from Mrs. Moore called The Bridge. See, she writes, I don't know how many hundred pages on Christian Science. She's so enthusiastic about her findings, finding out that actually spirit is matter and matter is spirit through her logic. And when one reasons it out, it's very easy what she does. She takes, again, a major and a minor proposition, but from different levels. She states, all is mind, all is spirit, and then she says, and matter is, because she can see that she has a house at home, she can see the hills and the flowers, when she looks out of the window and is very happy to see the sky just over those mountains and then the ocean, that's isness. So matter is, therefore, conclusion, matter is spirit and spirit is matter. It's as simple as that. See, it's a syllogism, apparently right stated from the point of view of human logic, wrongly stated from the dimensional logic. It's mixing up, again, two levels. All is mind, divine science, and a level of the material universe, matter is, and drawing a conclusion. The whole book is built on that, trying to prove that matter is spirit and spirit is matter. Isn't it terrific? Think of all the work that has gone into it and all the money that goes into it just to prove something on a wrongly stated basis. So be careful from now on in drawing conclusions, that those conclusions must be seen first as stated on its own level, but then somehow this would not really include a really dimensional logic, because the dimension should be knit together and make a whole and should not be in separate drawers, but would all be nicely knitted together into one whole, and therefore that dimensional logic needs something which practically no one has in its science, namely that the dimensional logic rests on the law of general translatability. The Christ. We know that each level is not the level per se, but it is only an aspect of the same infinite one, Therefore, one level cannot be separate from another level, meaning that one level translates itself into another form, into another aspect on another level. No matter if we go upward or downward, there is constantly a translated sense that comes out. Therefore, our logic must include a logic of infinite translatability. This is not so easy for any other science. Actually, when one reads books on the philosophy of science, one always hears that they would like to see the law of translatability.